This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. Hey, guys. Welcome to episode 277. Devin Dawson coming in just a few minutes, so we'll talk to him. Like, literally, he's coming in a few minutes. So we'll talk to him, and then Eddie and I will hop into songs that artists refuse to play live. Some of them still refuse to play these songs. They're massive songs. Some of them, they stopped playing them. Now they play them again. Some of them didn't play it, played it for a minute, and still don't play them. So we'll talk about that. As always, let's do my new music top five. Zayn from One Direction has a new album called Nobody Is Listening. Here's a new song called Vibes. You know them vibes, know them vibes. Put it on ya. If I'm moving too fast, we'll slow up. Maybe it's far from me. And number four, Blake Shelton has a new song. Had a little controversy with this one, but not really. It was a dumb controversy. People were like, why are you going to make fun of minimum wage? But the song is not. The song is called Minimum Wage from Blake Shelton. You can make a six-pack on the carpet. Tastes like a million-dollar bill. You can make a one-bedroom apartment feel like a house up on a hill. You can make my truck out in the driveway roll like a cleaned-up Cadillac. Girl, looking at you, looking at me that way can make a man feel rich on minimum wage. And number three is Seaforth. Now, they played the radio show. And let me tell you, they're really freaking good. Who knew? I met them before, but I didn't know they sounded that good live. Did you?
No, did not know.
Were you impressed?
I was very impressed.
What the crap? Out of nowhere. Here they are, number three. Their new song is called Breakups. I said I wouldn't call. We simply wouldn't talk. It all always ends bad. But I'm looking at my phone. And if you're not alone, I don't think I could take that. Cause I'm drunk at a bar at 2 a.m. And I just want to talk to my best friend. I said I wouldn't call. We said we wouldn't talk it all. But right now, all I want to do is hear your voice. Number two, Devin Dawson, who will be in later, has the Pink Slip EP. Here's a new song called Not On My Watch. Just when you thought I was down for the count, when you were ready to count me out, I come back a little stronger, cashing on my karma. Ooh, 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 ooh. Just when you thought I would call it a night. And number one, Maren Morris has a new song with JP Sachs. It is called Line by Line. Love too big for a love song. If I try to sum it up, I know I get it wrong. Sometimes if it don't sound right, I apologize, I just said it cause it rhymes. 4 chords, 3 minutes, it never fit in it. So I just take you line by line. They actually wrote that together, which is pretty cool there. There you go. That's my phone alarm going off saying don't be late for the Bobby cast, in case you heard that. Album's out, Future Violence Heaven is a place. This is the place. Sammy Hagar and The Circle have Lockdown 2020. You can now get it, stream it, digital version. Matthew Sweet has Cat's Paw. Kurt Vile Speed. Listen, I have no idea what this is. This one. Sound Lonely KV and EP. I don't know. That's just some words in front of me there that I'm going to read. In case you're a fan of Kurt Vile Speed, if that's the name. Music news. Morgan Wallen's new album, Dangerous, which came out Friday, is already a phenomenon. It set a record at Apple Music for the biggest first day and biggest first week country album in the history of the platform. It's also number one and the number one country album in 62 different countries. But to be fair, this is a massive record, obviously. But the 62 different country thing's weird because country's not that big outside of America. Mm. Australia does okay. The UK does okay. There are certain spots. But massive record. But the 62 different country thing, okay. And it doesn't mean anything. But it's fantastic. It's a fantastic record. Big deal. I mean, listen, it's the biggest Apple Music release. And that Apple Music's been rocking for a couple years now as far as,
yeah,
you know, the streaming music. And bigger than Luke Combs' last record, which surprised me. Not that I don't think the record is as good or better, but just, you know, Luke Combs has kind of been king dingling at stream. King dingling of stream.
And here you go, Morgan Wallen.
Hey, I just come up with a new term. King dingling of stream. At Chart Data tweeted, on January 9th, Dangerous, the double album, has now sold over 1 million total activity units in the U.S. I thought it was interesting that he sold so much so quickly. Maybe it's because of double album. I researched it. Each disc, not each album sold, is counted towards the chart. So if you sell 10 copies of an album with one disc, it will count as 10 sales. But if you sell 10 copies of a double album, it counts as 20 sales. So it does double your chart position. It's a great way around the system. Still massive, though. Good for him. Dave Grohl still has dreams that he's back with Nirvana. We'll actually talk about Nirvana and Foo Fighters later. This article came out yesterday. So a fact check into what we talk about later. The Foo Fighters frontman, who was the drummer in Nirvana until Kurt Cobain's tragic death in 94, only ever plays in the group's tracks live with bandmates Chris Novoselic and Pat Smear. Speaking in a new interview, am I saying that right?
Well, basically, he'll only play if he's like playing with them.
Yes.
Like, but not in public.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, I was meaning that as they only played it live, but okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Speaking in a new interview, he said he still dreams about the band and explained why he would never perform the tracks on his own. Oh, we do talk about this later.
Yeah.
Like, has he ever covered Smells Like Teen Spirit? That was the thing.
He doesn't want to sing Kurt's parts.
I wasn't comfortable singing a song that Kurt sang. I feel perfectly at home playing those songs on the drums, and I love playing them with Chris and Pat and another vocalist, which they did in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Mm. Whenever they put Nirvana in, this is not in the article, but I'm a Nirvana fan, and I watched, and they had a few different people sing with them. And I'm trying to think, who's the female guitar player? Saint?
Paul. No, not Paul.
No, Saint Paul would be a...
that would be the Placidity.
Yeah. Saint, whoever that Saint person is, she's really good. I can't say I'm a big fan. I've listened to her music. But she sang with them. I think there were a few different lead singers that jumped up there and sang their songs with them. But if you look back at the country or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Nirvana.
St. Vincent.
There you go. I think I see Devin Dawson driving in right now. So we'll keep going with this and come back with Devin in a second. Singer-songwriter Ed Bruce died at 81. Best known for writing Mamas, Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. He died last Friday, natural causes, 81 years old. He co-wrote the song, which was made famous in 1978 by Willie and Waylon, with his then-wife, Patsy Bruce. He also wrote Tanya Tucker's The Man That Turned My Mama On and Texas When I Die. This is a lot, and you saw a lot of country stars come out and just, you know, pay their respects to them. Tim McGraw, Blake Shelton, on and on. Rest in peace. Taylor Swift is the first act to have the best-selling album of the year 5 different times. Folklore was the bestseller of 2020 with almost 1.3 million copies. And there are 4 other ones, which are Fearless, 1989, Reputation, and Lover. There we go. That's all of them, right?
Yep.
I was making sure I got 5 of them there. Evermore is number one on the charts this week. Taylor has 51 weeks at number one, tying her with Michael Jackson for the 4th most all time. By the way, the biggest selling albums of 2020, Taylor Swift Evermore at 10, Eminem Music to be Murdered By at 9. Well, to be a top 10 record, I didn't hear much about that one.
Yeah.
It was surprising to me. And I like Eminem, but I only wonder if I like him because he was when I was big when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe not a kid. Late teen, mid-20s.
Yeah.
Halsey Manic, Juice WRLD, Legends Never Die, Lady Gaga, Chromatica at 6, Billie Eilish at 5, Harry Styles, Fine Line at 4. Great record, by the way. The Weeknd at 3, BTS, Map of the Soul at 2, and Taylor Swift dominating at number 1. Scott Weiland's son was kicked out of a band because of his drug use. Ironically, tragically, that's how Scott Weiland died. Scott Weiland was the lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots. Scott Weiland's son Noah has been kicked out of the band. He said he's heading down a dark path of drug use and got in the way of the band. So hope he gets himself on track. And boy, I loved Stone Temple Pilots back in the day. You probably never were a STP fan as little before you, huh?
Not, no.
There you go. All right, so Devin Dawson's about to come in. Always enjoy talking with this guy. And Eddie and I will talk about big songs that artists don't like playing anymore. All right. Thank you, guys. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only 6 numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. All right, and with Devin Dawson right now. Good to see you, bud.
You too, man.
You know,
what up?
What was surprising, you have a big old truck.
Well, you didn't expect that?
It's not that I didn't expect it. It's just for anyone. That's a big. I can't even drive an SUV.
Like, yeah.
Caitlin has an SUV, my fiance, and that to me is too big because I can't park.
Yeah, it's definitely like you get to know the, like the spatial awareness of it, and it's like one of those things where you're turning in and you think you're gonna just sideswipe this car, but you never do, and you fit right in. You know?
But do you get so close where you're like, I don't know? Like when you first get that thing, you got to be like, oh god.
I've driven a truck since I was 16 years old, so
but that's a big truck.
It is
a bigger
truck.
In a monster truck.
But you know what? Like I pride myself on it not being the biggest truck. Like I did, I only got the 4-inch lift, not the 6-inch lift. Like I still want to be able to fit into parking garages. You know what I mean? So
do you have to park in the back of a parking?
Like no.
If you go to Walmart or...
So I got this through a guy named Lee who, shout out ROC Customs. He's just an amazing guy. And I told him, I was like, I want it to be like mean, but I don't want it to be too redneck. But I also just want to be able to park freely wherever I go. I was like, make it as high and as mean as you can without inconveniencing my parking.
You know? Who has a bigger truck than you that in your group that you kind of run with? That we would know.
Kane Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, and he even sold one of his big ones recently. He's got a couple of them, but they're just like, and I can't even imagine trying to park that thing. You know what I mean? Tenpenny has one, Hardy has one, but mine's bigger than theirs. My truck is bigger than Hardy's.
Well, when you were pulling in, I was like, I think that's either Devin or a monster truck show. They're coming into the wrong place.
Don't listen to him. It's not that big, y'all. It looks good. Trust me.
Devin Dawson at ZDevin. So as we talk about this, if you want to go check out his Instagram, see what we're talking about, some of the stuff, I encourage you to do that.
Yeah.
You have the pink slip, which we're going to get to in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it for a second. So it's a new EP. It's six tracks.
Six tracks.
It's been a little bit though since we've had anything new from you.
Yeah, dude. It's been probably maybe almost coming up on 3 years since Dark Horse came out. And then to think about how long I did before the album even came out, because it was my first album, getting the single up the charts, writing, recording, all that. I think a lot of it was obviously just touring the crap out of that. Is that me?
No,
it's not. I think a lot of it was just touring the crap out of that album. You know, like your first album is like, I'm introducing myself to everyone. And I want to give this person in New York just as much of a personal experience as this person in California and everything in between, you know? So I think it was that. And then also just the way that, so I worked with a guy named Jay Joyce. He produced Dark Horse and he also produced the Pink Slip EP. And his creative process is very unique. Like he doesn't just do one song. He wants to do it all in one time. And so he creates and captures this moment, if you will. And so that just forces us to wait even longer to get all of the songs right and go in. And, you know, he's an incredible genius in his own right. And he has enough clout and, you know, affirmation to say that this is the way I do it and this is the way it works for me. And so I respect that, you know.
And we're going to come back to the whole thing in a second. But let's do... track one, which you may have seen the video for, which I guess Range Rover's, I've heard that for a while now. Is that the first one you put out?
Second song we put out.
Okay,
yeah.
I knew it was one of the early ones. Here is Range Rover from Devin. I'm looking for a girl that's fine. If I drive a pickup and she does not mind. Riding in it with the windows down. Cranking Keith Whitley loud. Next to me, I'm looking for a girl who sees past blown sneakers in a broken. Now, are you a guy that wants to write everything you sing, or are you a guy that goes, hey, if I happen to have a friend or somebody that writes a freaking good song, because they're going to take my songs, why would I not take one of theirs?
I definitely do want to write everything that I sing, but I'm not against singing something that I didn't write. I just had a hit with Hardy in One Beer and Lauren Elena, and that's the first song I didn't really write that I sang on, you know what I mean? And it was interesting, but it fell right into me because I just feel like Hardy's melodies and the way that he writes, we write a lot together, so it was a kind of a good match. But I don't know, I kind of model it after like the Eric Church thing. Like he writes all of his own songs, but then you have like Jesus does that he didn't write, but it sounds like an Eric Church song, you know?
And so or put that in your country song.
Exactly.
Sounds like something he would say, but
exactly.
He didn't write it.
Yeah. He didn't write it.
And so will you do a Devin Dawson? Cause to be fair, the Hardy song is Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you went on to his song. It's like going over to somebody's house, right?
Yep.
You're still gonna be a good guest. You're still gonna be cool.
But it's his house.
But it's his house.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I'm all six of these songs you wrote.
Correct.
And so will all six of the next songs that you put out be songs you wrote? Like in your mind, if you're going to put out a Devin Dawson song, and you can change, you're not held to this forever.
Yeah, no, I'm all about it.
Right now, is it, I got to write it to record it?
Yeah, I mean, that's 99% of my mindset. But if something comes along that one of my friends write and they send it to me and they have me in mind, like, and it's exactly how I would say it, like, I'm not above recording something that somebody else wrote. I just think I know my voice because I'm me. You know what I mean? I just think, and it's also a kind of a slippery slope because First of all, I think you're kind of dumb if you don't open up a little bit to the rest of the songs in this town, just because there's so many great songs. But then finding the ones that are very me, I think, is different, because I kind of am like an outlier alt kind of country guy, you know? But then it becomes a slippery slope, because once you ask one person for a song, then all of a sudden I start getting hundreds of songs, and I would hate to know that there's one in there that's a hit that I missed or something, or I just don't have time to listen to them all, you know? So I try to keep it pretty close to the chest. But if something comes through that's really meant to be, I'm all about it.
I do want to play All On Me as just a reminder to folks that are listening. This song was a jam. Here you go. Still is a jam. You can call on me if you in trouble, put the fall on me. When you're mad, you can take it out on me. We were doing a segment in this podcast. It'll be heard later. But we were talking about artists that don't want to play their big hits anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we talk about Nirvana coming up. We talk about Radiohead.
Mm-hmm.
You want to play All of Me Until You Die?
I will play it till I die. I might change it a little bit here and there. Like, I kind of do the bridge a little differently now. Like, I just play some different chords. I just try to stay inspired. Like, one day I did it swung instead of like, I did, like, just kind of change up little things just to stay inspired. Because I think sometimes the reason that artists do that is we sing them so many thousands of times. And I picture it like driving down a road. Like, if you drive that road 1,000 times in the dirt, you're going to create ruts. You know what I mean? And it's just, sometimes it feels easier to get on the same road, but just in a little bit different of a spot. So it just feels new, you know? It's just kind of re-inspiring and reimagining what the song feels like. But yeah, I'm proud of that song. Like, I will sing that for the rest of my life, you know?
I got to tell you though, if I go to a show, and I'll give you an example. Like, if I go to a Counting Crows show and they sing one of their hits with a completely different melody.
I know.
I am out of my mind. The whole crowd were like, hey, we want to sing a Long December.
I hated that when I was a kid, too.
It's like, and if you do it with a song, great. That you should. But when they do it, they did the whole dang set just about. And I love Adam Duritz.
That's hard.
And I was like, guys, I want to sing Mr. Jones.
Yeah, I don't change it enough to where you can't sing to it. I might just do a little up instead of a down, or I might change a little tiny thing in the bridge. But are you a John Bellion fan?
Yeah.
I think he is, like, on another level creatively. I think he's just in touch with the portal. And I've seen him live a couple times, and I didn't love it because of that. He changes the key, he changes the melodies, he changes the arrangement, and the only thing that's the same is the lyric. And I'm like trying to figure out what song it is, and I might catch a lyric that I recognize. I'm like, wait, that's that song? And so I appreciate the musicality of it and like what it takes to just literally recreate a song. But I wanted to sing along, you know what I mean? And so I recognize that. And sometimes we're different as listeners and writers. Like, I find I'm a different person in different headspaces when I'm listening to somebody else or when I'm the one on stage. So I got to remind myself that, you know?
Similar to what you're talking about, I saw Bob Dylan once, and it wasn't that he was changing up any sort of melody or lyrics. I just didn't know what the heck he was saying.
Yeah, he's...
he was so
old. There's not really much melody there anyways.
Yeah, he was so old, and I felt bad for him, but I would have to listen for a couple of words...
Yeah.
To figure out what he was singing.
Yeah, that's one of those things. You got to go see Bob Dylan to say you saw Bob Dylan. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, I always thought he looked like Captain Hook from Hook. That
he kind of, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, he kind of does.
Like, I don't know why I always just put that in my head and I've held on to that. But yeah, that's a bucket list thing for sure.
Number one is a songwriter. You wrote God's Country for Blake Shelton, which is one of the biggest songs of the past few years, period.
It's insane, dude.
Let me play it for a second. Side getting baptized in holy water and shine with the dogs running. So talk to me about this as far as a songwriter. you're in the room.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget it. It was January 7th.
Was it memorable? That was my next one, because sometimes you write a hit and it's not that memorable.
Some of it was, and some of it was like, not the fact that it wasn't memorable, but a lot of it was like blacking out. Like, we just like go through this creative journey and you're like, what just happened?
Oh, so it was that strong?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, we knew it was good, but I don't think until we heard the demo back like the next day when Jordan sent it that we were like, whoa.
Okay, who's we?
Me, Hardy, and Jordan Schmidt. So it was actually, you know, it was the first day we had written since Christmas break, January 7th. We were all just like really fresh. Hardy had been home in his hometown and he just had this idea called God's Country. And usually we try to like, what's the flip or what's the turn or what's the thing that's going to make the opposite and the up, down and the left, right. And like, and it just was like, well, why don't we just write straight at it. Like, to me, God's Country is something that means the same thing to everyone, but like in a different way, whether it's your hometown or whether it's the country or whatever it is, you know? And so it was this relatable thing. And so it was important that we said, we turn the dirt and work until the week's done. We break bread and break bread on, you know, we do these things. It was a we thing. And like, so it became an anthem in a way, I guess. And that kind of just drived the energy of it. I really remember fighting for dogs running because I loved like the image of that. It kind of gave me like, oh brother, where art thou, like muddy riverside kind of thing. And
you know what's funny about you saying that, because I pictured it completely different.
Really?
And it's the receiver versus the creator or sender, right? Mm-hmm. Because dogs running to you, I think literally meant dogs running. What did I mean to you?
Just
you say that
somewhere,
just straight dogs running.
Yeah,
for me growing up being a hunter my whole life, we used to run dogs like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it as with the dogs running, like you're out running dogs after a deer,
right,
or after a fox.
Right.
And so I heard it, same words,
yeah,
but I just...
You have a different picture.
It was a 20% interpretation difference.
And that's the cool thing about songs. I think sometimes you can get really specific and you think that it's going to alienate people, but sometimes those specifics allow them to put it in their own story. You know what I mean? Yeah, the other thing I remember is... I think it was like an alley-oop thing, but I was like, we have to do something with The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Like, I don't know where it is. I don't know what... And Hardy just goes, Devil went down to Georgia, but he didn't stick around. This is God's Country. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. We gotta not mess this one up. We gotta get out of its way, you know? And yeah, that's... I mean, it's been such a blessing.
You finish it, and you say you didn't really know the power of it. And this is still... way early on, you hear the demo back.
Mm-hmm.
Who sang the demo?
Hardy sang the demo. That was his idea. And at that time, and I can get into this more a little bit too, but it was kind of more teed up for his artistry than mine. One, it was his idea, and he started singing it in the room. And you don't go in saying like, we're going to write one for Hardy or we're going to write one for Devin. It's just, where does the creative juice land? Is it your idea? Is it mine? Even if it's my idea, is it better if you... It kind of just works out by the end, you know? And he sang the demo, and I think, you know, I'm such a lyric guy that I left knowing that the lyrics were airtight, and I knew all the melodies were good, but I just hadn't heard it, like, in one play altogether, and so I knew it was good, but sometimes you have to wait for the harmonies to come in and, like, all the track stuff to kind of exemplify it, I guess.
And you needed the whole blanket to lay on you.
100%.
It's kind of the way I would describe it.
100%.
When it's all put. So the whole blanket lays on you, and you're like, okay, but then... It's not you didn't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Hardy didn't cut it. Did Hardy want to cut it?
From what I understand, it was one thing where Hardy was like, holy crap, like, I love this song. I want to sing this. And I think his publisher was like, I know Blake's cutting. Like, if we can just send it to him and see what he thinks, like, would you be down for that? And Hardy was like, he's the only person that would sing this. And if he's not going to do it, I'm going to do it. He's like, that's the only person that I can really envision. And from what I understand, Hardy's publisher sent it to Scott Hendricks, who's Blake's producer. And Scott sent Blake like a playlist of like five or six songs to listen to pitch to him. And he's out in Oklahoma and his farm riding in his tractor. And the first one on the list is God's Country. And apparently he just stopped the tractor and was like, I don't need to hear any of these other songs. Like, this is what I want to do. And they literally went into the studio the next week. Like, from blank paper to number one, it was like 6 months. And that never ever. And this isn't me bragging. This is me like in disbelief. You know what I mean? It's like that never happens. It's almost like ruined the rest of it for me because it probably won't happen that quick or that great ever again. I don't know. But
so with that, with the song, I guess with the track, did you hear it? And how early did you get to hear it before everybody else heard it?
Well, I had because I'm at Warner as well. And so Blake is at Warner and, Scott was working on it and he wanted me to do a harmony. He had used some of Hardy's vocals from the demo and he's like, why don't you sing a low harmony on the chorus? And so I'm on the chorus and then there's like this high, like metal, yeah, like this high thing that I'm not going to do in this room right now. But I did a version of that and I think he used one of mine and one of Hardy's. And so I kind of like heard it as it went. Like I still have like an acoustic version of it that I did that he sent to my brother because I did my vocals with my brother Jacob. And I just knew it was going to be crazy, but even then, I'm never going to tell myself this is a single, this is the first single, until I get that call from Espo or Chris Lacey, whoever it is. Like, I'm still just acting like it's just a good song. You know what I mean?
But you hear it all the way through on the radio or playing over a speaker, and is it like level two of what you heard the first time when you heard the demo?
Yeah, his voice, like, I mean, Blake, the way he sings and the way he pronounces words, like, he's so good at pronouncing. I don't know how else to say it. Like, his phonetics are just, like, really unique to the way that he talks. And hearing him interpret some of the words that Hardy would say, but maybe slur a little bit because it's Hardy's swag, you know, was really cool to just, and yeah, I don't know if I'm answering your question. I'm just trying to remember all of it. It's just, it was just a cool moment.
They won the single of the year at the CMAs. Mm-hmm. So it went from, you know, you to him cutting it quickly to coming out to winning single of the year. Mm-hmm. I think if I'm remembering right, because maybe it was ACM's, it was an award show that I was presenting on. And then I remember seeing you with Blake on a stage that mm-hmm. wasn't in the same building. What was that, at Blake's bar?
We did sing at CMA Fest at his, the Old Red Bar down.
Is that what I remember?
Yeah. So I went, he did a performance for CMA Fest where a lot of people were in the stadium. You know, they would usually do that. I think he just wanted to do it in his bar, and then they cut it on the big screens in the stadium. And I came and sang a harmony. And
I thought that was super cool. You wrote the song. And it's just crazy. You're on there with him.
And just to be completely candid, which I feel like I can always do with you, like, I love that moment, but I also felt like I wanted Hardy to be there, like, because it was his idea and he sang the demo. And I think I obviously am going to jump at any chance to sing a harmony. And I know he used both of our things, but it was like, I kind of felt bad to be on that stage without Hardy because, like, he's done so much. And it was like he's just a beast. And I just always want to tip my hat to him. You know what I mean?
Last question about this song is that I am assuming, being the assumer that I am, that you made more money off this song than any other song. By far.
Yeah.
And it's still probably coming in.
Yeah, this one will be like, this is what we call like a copyright. Like, it'll be, it's his biggest song ever, which is so crazy, you know? And it's definitely been way easier and a lot less stressful during quarantine.
Yeah.
Because of that, I've also been able to pay my band out of my publishing pocket because I haven't been able to play any shows, and I've still been able to support them and help them pay their bills. So it's been a blessing in such a weird year. It's been the most incredible bright spot to kind of like set me up. It's like you look back on things and you're like, wow, like, if that hadn't happened, how would this year been way different for me? I would have probably been a little bit more stressed, you know?
You mentioned one beer. Let's play a little bit of this.
One beer turns into a lit cigarette, burning into a two beer buzz. Three beers turn.
So you get a number one as a feature.
Mm-hmm.
Does Hardy hit you up and go, hey, we're going to do a... There's a three of us, four of us, two of us. Like, what? When he hits you up, what's he say?
This one's kind of crazy because we were actually at Red Door celebrating God's Country Going number one and all drinking tequila and beer. And my twin brother drums for Hardy and also writes with him a lot. If you haven't met Jacob, you will soon. He's crushing it right now.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
He produced one of our Raging Idiot songs that we play on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know him.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. He's like, oh, I know your brother.
Yeah.
You probably saw him more recently than you saw me recently, probably.
Yeah, yes.
But he, so we were all at the bar anyways, and my brother had told me Hardy's working on this like feature album, Hicks tape with friends and stuff like that. And I kind of like got in Hardy's ear a little bit. I was like, hey, like, I hear you're working on something. Like, if you got something a little like left-handed, a little weird, a little darker, like, get your boy on it, you know? And he sent me the song the next day and he was like, we really wanted to do this song, but it's such an outlier on this album. Like, we didn't know how to get it right. And then you came up and it just kind of all made sense. And then Lauren was in, and it's like, when you hear that whole album of just like back road redneck smashes, and then you hear this, it's not ballady by any means. It just has a little bit different edge sonically than the other ones. And definitely the most unlikely single in my mind, like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's the last song on the album. It's kind of the darker one compared to these like stadium smashes. But I think that's why it poked through somehow, because it was different. And
I agree.
You know, I guess that's what, because the fans reacted to it. You know, Big Loud is really good about just listening to stats and looking at plays. And apparently this was one of the most, like, people went back to this song on their own, their natural plays or whatever. And they chose it as a single. And it was weird working a song during a year where we would have normally played this on like TV shows and radio shows and all this stuff. And we've maybe sang it four times total. It's crazy. It's like, if a number one goes in the woods, does it fall? Does anyone know it's a number one in the woods? I don't know. It's crazy, man.
I'm going to ask you about what you think of Country Now from Morgan Wallen,
mm-hmm.
Which you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So play a little bit of this.
Now you took a little ride around the fall.
Who'd you ride this one with?
Wrote this with Dallas Davidson, Justin Wilson, my best friend Kyle Fishman, who I've known since I was 12 years old, and Mr. Mark Holman. And we literally started the day at 10 a.m. at Luke Bryan's bar downtown. And Dallas Davidson and Luke are really good friends, and the bar doesn't open till 11. And we went there and like knocked on the door. They're like, hey, we're not open yet. And Dallas is like, I'll just call Luke real quick. And I'm just like in the back laughing, like, this is ridiculous. And just that's just how the day started. And then, of course, we get like a party anthem out of it. And I don't know. I kind of just sat back and worked on lyrics. This one, like melodically and musically, is a little bit more country red than I go. But I also just want to make sure it's a well-crafted lyric, you know. So I let Dallas do his thing melodically and kind of just figured out how to get the lyrics together. But
were you a straight songwriter on this, or were you writing songs for you that day, or were you just writing songs with
this is the second song we wrote that day, so I think we just wanted to get together and write a bunch. We wrote one in the morning that was really cool, and then Kyle just played this track, and someone had the title, and then I sang that melody, and it kind of just like went out. And I think at that point we were just having fun and writing a song, not even knowing who it was for. You know what I mean? And I think that comes through when you hear it. You know, it's just fun.
Track two on the Pink Slip. This is I Got a Truck from Devin.
Mm-hmm. I got a song. I got something to say. I got a will to survive. Got a dollar to my name. I got a heart. Got a little bit of luck. I got this go and get it feeling in my gut. And I got a truck.
Do you sing about how massive your truck is later on in the song?
That's the B-side version.
What's up with this track? What was the inspiration for the song?
Oh my gosh, so many things to say, and I'm going to try to keep it short. But essentially, it was inspired by a conversation I had with Tim McGraw. We were on the road with him for a couple summers with him and Faith for the Soul to Soul tours, and if I'm right, which I know I am, this was the first night in Louisiana, and that's his home state. And usually I think his dressing room is on the other side of the arena, and then, you know, we get over here with the openers on our side or whatever. But I think he had so much family that night from being in Louisiana that for whatever reason his dressing room was right next to ours. First night, play Dark Horse at the end of my set, walking off stage, let my band play out the outro. They have their moment. I shake hands, give hugs, things we used to do. And walk in the back, take my ears out, and I got my guitar. And Tim is just in the hallway with his guitar player, Bobby, and he's just warming up and singing a cover that he was working on that night or something. And I was like, well, this is an icebreaker. You know, I just walked up, started singing and playing, and it kind of just turned into, you know, thanks for having me, welcome to the show. Like, if you need anything, let me know. And it just turned into like a wisdom conversation and things that he has found to hold on to, things that he has found that are, you know, important to just instill in someone new like me, I guess. I think he saw a lot of himself in the place I was in. And when he started telling me the story of him, I'm really trying to make this short, I'm sorry, but when he first came to Nashville, he had built, and this was a story he's telling me, he had built a following, he had these songs, you know, but he still needed that like first initial like champion to believe in him or sign him or give him a publishing deal or a record deal so that he could have money to just solely do music. It's that first jump where you're like, I don't want to work at a bar anymore. I don't want to do this odd job thing. I just want to play music and be able to get to the next step. And no one would take a shot on him. And that happens to so many people in this town. It's crazy. But there was a guy named Brian Williams in town, and he was a banker. And he's since passed away. I never got to meet him, unfortunately. But I know a lot of people that that did know him, and he was a great man. And he was known for believing in people that he saw something in that maybe no one else was ready to take a shot on yet. And I guess Tim knew that and came to Brian at the bank and was like, man, I got these songs. I have this work ethic. I have this touring following. I have this crappy old truck I can trade you. It's not worth much, but if you give me this $36,000 I need to get this next record out or whatever it is, like, promise I'll pay you back. And I'm just sitting here like, I walk around with mysticism everywhere I go looking for a song, you know, and I'm just like, this is like falling in my lap. And she's like, have you written that song? You know, it's like your story. And he's like, he kind of like shoved it off a little bit. Not like rude or anything. He's like, no, I haven't written it, you know. And I just couldn't stop thinking about it and how much I saw my story in his story, because I, like I said, I've driven a truck for my whole life, and I drove a truck from California to Nashville, and I actually still have it. I didn't have to trade it in like he did or anything, but I just related to it and I started strumming it in the dressing room during the changeover, and by the end of the night in the back of the bus, I'd finished it, you know. And I don't know, it's not every day that you get a song that is a real story that you get to be the interpreter for. Like, we're always trying to have a title and come up with a story or make up something that sounds cool. And it's not every day that you get to write something that's completely true and honest and organic of how it got to you. And that was something, I mean, it doesn't really happen. It hasn't really happened since, you know. And so I'm glad that I was there to hear the story and be a vessel for that and then interpret in my way. And I ended up doing like a little bus demo with my band and giving it to him as like a end of tour gift. Like, what do you buy Tim McGraw? He has an island. Like, I'm not going to buy him anything. Like, but I can write him a song that means something, you know, and say thanks for inspiring me. And I think hopefully I was trying to get him to record it. Maybe it was my ultimate goal, but in that I tricked myself into finding a song that was really about my story too. And we started putting it in our set just to kind of play some new songs. And it became like, for my fans, the first new song that they had heard since Dark Horse, and they posted it online and all that. And it just felt like this is the first track we put out on the Pink Slip EP, and it felt like just the first thing to say. It had heart. It was a country song. If you just want to hear it for a truck song, it's there for you for that. But if you want to dig deeper and you want more from it, it's there for that too, you know.
You know, I watch you talk. You talk like me with your hands a lot. Mm. But I see your wedding band. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in the process. Oh, I'm getting married this summer. Is that a rubber? What is that?
It's a cheap tungsten ring.
Okay. What is the reasoning behind mm-hmm. a cheap tungsten ring for you?
Well, I just didn't want anything crazy. Like, I didn't want some black I'm going to wear a black band. You know me. You know what I mean? And so I didn't want some black diamond, like $20,000 thing that I was going to play guitar on and scratch and go on the road and all that. And so tungsten is, it's not dyed. So it's not going to like fade and it's not going to rub off. Like, this is the color of it, you know? So that was important to me. But just, I didn't need anything crazy. Like, it's more about, this is cheesy as heck, but it's more about, you know, what it represents for me and all that. And I'll spend my money on her ring. You know what I mean?
You're getting married in 2019?
October, yep.
No, it's just weird.
I know. It's been about a year and a half now. So
what have you learned in a year and a half about marriage that you didn't know a year and a half ago?
Man, that's a hard question. I think I learned how to listen a little bit better. I'm definitely very, like, just like anyone else, I don't like to be wrong. And it's not that I'm just going to say I'm wrong if I don't think I'm wrong, just to finish the argument or whatever. But I think I learned how to take turns talking, you know what I mean? Rather than just firing back what your initial thought is.
I do that. Hate it.
But you're also good at listening because you just let me tell a 5-minute story about
I got
a truck.
Though. Yeah. It's easy to listen when you're.
But I think I'm not a yeller. Like, Leah, I love her to death, and she'll tell you the same thing. She's got a little bit of a temper. You know what I mean? She pops off real quick. And so I think for me, we're the perfect match because I'm just going to calmly let you do your thing, and then I'm going to tell you how I feel. And I think just taking turns and not just hearing, this is so cheesy and so like, counseling, you know, marriage counselor, but like not just hearing, but listening to what they're saying and then taking it in and then replying and just trying to hear from somebody else's point of view. You know, so much of our relationship was based on me being gone more than half the time. And now we've been at home for about a year, over a year. And it was almost like, not that I ever had any doubts, but it was really affirming to know, like, okay, I made the right decision. Like, we are so good. It's been such a great first year of marriage. And one thing that people don't, you know, it's like, yeah, I want to love you for the rest of my life. But when you get married, you tell someone, like, we're going to literally hang out forever. Like, you're my best friend sort of thing. But it's not even just that. It's like, even just standing in a room and saying nothing. You know what I mean? Like, it's comfy. That's just, you got to find that person that you can just say nothing with. And it doesn't matter, if that makes sense, you know?
Are you a happier person now than you were 2 years ago?
Oh my God.
Oh, not even a question, huh?
Yeah, dude. And I think it's been kind of hard because, like, I'm not used to that. And I think creatively trying to make sense of that is kind of what this EP is, not to point it back to that. But, you know, it's a little bit more hopeful. It's a little bit more brighter, which is not something that I usually gravitate towards musically. Of course there were sad songs. Of course there were ballads, and we can get into why there aren't any on that yet. But I think it is difficult for me to try to figure out how to be inspired. I used to write love songs about where I wanted to be. You know what I mean? And now I write them about where I am. And I need to, when I want to write a heartbreak song, I have to channel some different kind of heartbreak. Whether it's not, she's not going to break my heart, but maybe a song didn't go the way I wanted it, or maybe something happens with work, or maybe it's family, or maybe it's the world, or whatever. And then I kind of channel that into a love song in a way. So it's my shifts have changed. And without a doubt, and it's not just Leah, that's a huge part of it, you know, but I've seen the world. I've had a little success. I have a house. I have two dogs. You know, I've had time at home to rest and reflect and not feel bad about it. And I'm in a good place, dude.
It's interesting that you mention you have to find new ways to interpret and write. You know, when I was going to my therapist, I was like, hey, I'm not lonely and sad anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm not creating the same way, and I'm scared that's going to hurt if I'm writing. You know, a book or jokes, because you write,
or just content, whatever.
You write cut a bit different than you write healthy.
Correct.
I felt that way about me, and I was like, I don't think it's going to be the same. And she was like, it's not going to be the same, but you've got to find a way to highlight that it's different, but you're also good at it. So figure out how to make that.
Recognize that it's different.
But use that the same way you were using this. And my biggest problem has been, now that I'm not so miserable, and actually I'm the happiest I've ever been too.
Congrats,
but now that I'm not so miserable, I also just don't have the time to create as much, because mostly I would just be lonely and miserable, and I'd be like,
what else am I going to do?
Something.
I know.
Now I'm like, you know what? We're just going to watch a TV show. This is great.
I know.
We have some dinner.
I know.
And so.
And just be and exist.
Yes.
Right?
And I'm much healthier and happier. I do create differently, but I'm still trying to dial in how to do it right.
Yeah, me too. I honestly am. It's interesting for me, because I will always be that dark horse guy. I'll always be that outlier in this genre, because that's just what I do. But I will also be that guy that wants to be grounded in vulnerability and introspectiveness, if that's a word. And I will still sing heartbreak songs for the rest of my life, because that's what got me into music in the first place. And that's just the character I like to play when I'm singing. You know, my first hit was a love song. You know what I mean? But people will know me for that, the chances I take on the darker side of things, you know, and that's not going to go anywhere. But I definitely did need to put out some music that was I'm pretty happy right now. And it's almost like survivor's guilt in a way. You know what I mean? It's all these fans that I've made, you know, from being the dark horse. It's hey, I want to inspire you, because I have one foot in the door now. I'm not saying I'm good. I'm just saying I've come a long way, and I'm holding the door open for you. I want to turn around and be inspire and keep hopeful. And that's kind of just what I'm trying to put for in the feeling of this EP, you know?
And I love that. And I'll just one more analogy that I'll make, because it's not often for me that I talk to somebody who has experienced growth and continues to produce and create while acknowledging the growth, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I was always the guy who represented a lot of folks who grew up with nothing. Mm-hmm. I lived below poverty my whole life. Struggled, had no help ever. Mm-hmm. Everything. I don't live like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I am now quite successful. Mm-hmm. I'll never not be that guy.
Right.
Never.
It's a part of
you. And I will always, now I see my job as to go, hey, if you want to get out of that hole, let me tell you what I did that helped me.
Yeah.
And so that has been...
Wow, that's exactly what I was trying to say.
The growth in me has been... I'm not the same... I'm the same guy.
Yeah.
But I have grown since then. And let me show you why. You don't have to do it.
Yeah.
But let me show you that it's possible.
Yeah.
And I'm still that. And I'm still representing you. And I know what it's like. But, you know, for you to say that, I go, oh crap, I kind of felt that. You know, you have someone write the song and you go, oh crap, I kind of felt that.
Didn't really...
But that's... When you said that, slightly different. But, you know, that's who I was, still am... But I've also grown through that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you can do it too.
Well, people follow us or listen to us or buy our music or whatever, because they want to know about our life. Like, you know, whether you like it or not as an artist, you know, your job is to put your life on display. You know, you have control over what you want to put out, but at the same time, you also have a kind of an obligation to yourself to just tell the truth, you know? And so I did struggle a little bit with I didn't want it to seem like, all right, I'm good. Y'all have fun. Like, you know what I mean? Because I'm not fully there. I don't know if I'll ever arrive. But I just wanted to make sure that people knew I was still, like, I'll always be a dark horse. You'll always be that kid that didn't have anything growing up, and that's just in your foundation. And I think that's why you relate to those same people, and the way I still relate to people that might be going through something, you know. And I'm sure there's another day that I'll be pretty sad again, you know, and I'll write
only,
a great...
We can only hope, Devin.
I know,
we
dude.
Can only
I,
hope.
I was, like, laughing about, like, John Lennon and Yoko and, like, all the good songs before Yoko came along, and I'm like, no, like, I'm going to find a way. Or it's just, like, those people that, like, have addictions to alcohol or drugs, and they're creators, and then they get clean, and they feel like they can't write the same song again. It's like, well, you can. It's not like it wasn't in you. It's just that you lost that, like, it killed the editor in your brain that was like, you shouldn't say this or you should whatever. It's like, and that's what you need to do for me is just, like, getting into that flow state, being 100% myself and then just existing. And that's where genius comes from, without that person in your head being like, oh, don't say that, or that's too dumb, or that's never going to work. Just do it and figure it out afterwards. If it's not good, go to the next one, you know?
Here is Not On My Watch.
Just when you thought I was down for the count.
Good little segue.
When you were ready to count me out, I come back a little stronger, cashing on my karma. Ooh, 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 ooh. Just when you thought I would call it a night.
You lit up a little bit when this one came on. Not that you don't light up for all of them, but this one was like, yeah. You can't, what's up with this song?
This is like the diss track to the devil on my shoulder. That's the best way I can describe it. It's like, it's exactly what I was just talking about, which is why it was such a good segue. But it's like, that person in your mind that tells you you're not good enough, or maybe it's an actual person, you know what I mean? Maybe it's not just that person in your head that says, you know, hold off, hold on, like back off, like do, you know, at the end of the chorus, there's like this section that I don't really sing. And it's these things that people try to tell you to hold you back. And it's like, to me, it was 12 things. And I saw it like on an image of a clock. I saw like, instead of a one and a two, it was hold on, hold off, back up, fall down, da-da. And it was 12 of these things. And to me, I was like the double entendre of like, yo, I don't know about you, but that's not on my watch. I don't have give up on my watch. You know what I mean? But also, I'm not going to let myself give up, like not on my watch. You know what I mean? And so it's really this kind of introspective personal song about just going and doing it and knowing that there's struggles. And there's a line in the second verse about like, I'm walking on a tightrope. You know, I might be walking on a tightrope, but that's just the way I thrive, though. It's like those moments where your back's against the wall. And maybe you are heartbroken, and that like we overcome that and we turn it into fuel. And it just, I don't know, the song makes me smile because I want it to like freak people out in a way. It's different. I mean, I needed a song on this batch that was like, wow, like, you know what I mean? Because I feel like I have that license in this town and in this genre to do something that no one's ever heard. And to do that every day is really hard, you know what I mean? But when you finally find it and it's honest to what you're going through, I don't care what anyone says. This was like, I'm doing this song. Like, I don't care if it's a single. I know it's not going to work on country radio, probably. You know what I mean? But, like, this is also indicative of just the footprint I want to put on the moon of Nashville. And, like, this is just my way to be daring and create, keep using that license that I've had since Dark Horse came out, if that makes sense.
Whatever forever is.
One look at you and girl.
It's a love song.
Yeah, dude. It's like tricking people into a marriage song without it being like a 6-8 like waltz. You know what I mean?
Oh. When you write this, you go, hey, how early do you go to, you know, your wife and go, hey, I wrote this. This is about you, inspired by you.
You know, we don't share like a whole lot. Like, we're not closed off when it comes to music. And actually, that was one of my things I really wanted to be better at this year. Like, every time I turn a song into my publisher, I want to put her on CC and, like, so I want her to hear the song. Like, I'll share songs with her. But for those of you that are listening, my wife, Leah, is also an incredible pop artist, writer, R&B, rap. She's just such a badass. And we kind of live in different worlds a little bit, but they overlap, obviously. Like, I kind of have an eclectic thing. But I don't know. Like, we don't, like, we share songs, but it's not like every day before we go to bed at night. It's like, hey, baby, can I play you this demo?
But what if it's specifically about inspired her. Or written about her? Does that make it different?
It should. Yeah. It should. I'm learning things here, Bobby, okay? Right. I told you, I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there.
Here's He Loved Her.
He earned his keep and kept his word. He lived his life and he loved her.
sonically, the juxtaposition between those two songs, and I'm assuming very purposefully, very different.
Yeah, 100%. One is very, like, not electronic, but it's very tight, and everything is, like, kind of swimmy, and this one's just a live take, you know? Kind of like All On Me was, just a live take.
Turn this up a little bit more, Mike. What would really mean the most? Sugar up on a Friday night with all the ones that know me well. Raise a glass and tip it back and say he lived his life like anyone else. He had a and track six, Who's Gonna Hold Ya? Who's gonna hold ya when everything else is letting go? Who's gonna know ya better than anyone? So my question would be, is there, you know, another six coming out that are all extremely slow and vulnerable? That's like the opposite.
Man, I really hope so. Again, just to be completely candid with you, on like I always try to be, you know, we went in at the beginning of this year to record, and we did these songs, and we were going to do more, and then COVID hit, and I work with a guy named Jay Joyce, and I talked about him earlier, but he's 50 years old, he's been smoking for 30 years, and he has diabetes, and there's no way I'm going to get into the studio, you know what I mean, until when? I don't know, you know, and so it was partly that. It was also partly that I just... working through his creative process is just really hard. He's a by himself guy. Like, we'll cut it the day of live, and then he'll take it away for a month and I won't hear it. And then when it gets back to me, sometimes it's what I expected and sometimes it's completely different. And it's really hard for me to like let go of that control. I think it can be healthy sometimes. But I also am an artist that knows exactly what I want, and I know how to say that, you know? And so it was kind of hard this time working with him, harder than before, and so I had to overcome that challenge. And I do 100% like fully believe that we did get there on these songs, you know what I mean? But the other ones that we had started that we didn't even get a chance to finish, it was probably for a good reason. And the other side of that is that I didn't want to wait any longer to put out new music. I don't care if the ballad that I wanted to be a single didn't get recorded yet, or this one could be a single, or whatever. Like, I wanted to showcase that slower, darker side that I was talking about. We just hadn't done it yet. And so more important than that to me, even though it might sound a little counterintuitive, was just getting new music out to my fans. It's been so long since Dark Horse, dude, you know? And so I didn't want to wait till the end of a pandemic, whenever that's going to be, to finish an album or whatever. And so we had these six songs done, and then they started feeling like a thing together after we mixed them. And then the pink slip, the title came, and it kind of all just felt like a bundle that I just wanted to let fly, you know, if that makes sense.
I saw Ben Rector in your Range Rover video.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know Ben?
I chased Ben down, dude. I was a fan for a long time.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I like finally had a couple like successes under my songwriting belt, and I was like, yo, I want to write with Ben Rector. And I just had a feeling, but we wrote Range Rover together.
I didn't know that.
So we wrote that song together.
So that makes sense why he would agree to be in the video.
Yeah, well, I wanted him to have a little cameo, and I believe that he's going to do his own version on his next album. I know he's recorded it. We'll see if it comes out. Like I said, I don't get excited until it's on the list. But him and I both have a need to, like I said, reinvent the wheel, say something big and different, but do it in a relatable, digestible way, you know? And Range Rover is a very left-handed idea about a guy who realizes that the girl he's with is not who he wants to be with forever, and he's looking for the girl that wants to ride in the truck, and she's looking for the Range Rover, you know? And I don't think I would have been able to go there and just get crazy and just throw it out on the table with anyone but Ben. Also, I'm not like the best at like cheeky stuff and comedy videos and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of take myself a little seriously. Like, I'm a funny guy. I can tell jokes. But without him in that video, it would not have been the same. Without his like little comedic timing and the things that he does, and that he's so good at that dry humor. And so he made it. If you guys haven't seen it yet, he's got a big old mustache, and he's the realtor that... of the house. He's just, I love Ben. We've become really close, and he's an incredible artist.
The pink slip's out today. When this airs, not actually today when we're recording this,
mm-hmm.
but today as it airs, when you're hearing our voices, it is out. Devin Dawson at Z Devin. I'll mention this quickly. You did break your Instagram rule of only black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Is that new Devin?
It's partly part of me. I really felt like, and again, being completely honest, I started to feel like I was like trapped in this like black and white thing where I was like, I have to do this, you know? But I also didn't want it to be this huge moment of like, an awards show when I don't wear black, or the day I just, it had all this buildup, you know, and I was being honest with myself. And then, you know, but I think as much of my brand is the black and white, and I will always, you know, black will always be the star in my wardrobe. It was part of my brand also is my songwriting and my ability to serve those songs. And when I came to Range Rover, we did the video in color as well, which is where that kind of came from. But I didn't, there's no way I can see a Range Rover video in black and white. It's not moody. It's not dark. It's not like vulnerable. It's upbeat and it's heavy and it's cheeky, and it needed to be in color. And so it was more about serving that song than like staying stuck into this thing that I promised myself I would do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still going to do it a lot because I love the way it looks, but it's pretty freeing now that I just do whatever I want, you know?
Well, it's great. People can't see us right now, but Devin's in a pink bunny outfit. He really went hard. And even
hard the other way.
I was surprised when he came in too, yeah.
Pink slip, you know, you got to keep the branding. Got to keep the branding up.
All right, you guys, check it out. It's out today. If you're already a fan, congratulations. You got more. If you heard this, maybe go be a new fan. Z Devin, congratulations.
Thank you, Bobby. You too, dude.
Good to see you, man.
You too.
There he is. As usual, when we talk about a music topic, Eddie comes in because he is a massive music fan, also co-host of the Sore Losers podcast. Eddie, how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're talking about, and we've mentioned this in smaller capacities here on this podcast, but hit songs that musicians, once they become massive, don't want to play them anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And again, we've referenced Radiohead, right?
Yep. They don't play Creep.
They don't play Creep. It became such a big hit. They got tired of it. They were like, this doesn't really stand for what we do now. And it also bothered them that fans would wait for them to play it, then leave.
Oh, yeah. But I think most artists know that, so that's why they don't play it till the very end.
True.
You know, and I think the artists also know that I understand why it's hard for them to do this. I get it. It's tiresome. They're over the song. But us as the consumer, that's what we need, and that's why we like you.
Especially new fans.
Yes.
Like, this song was a radio hit.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a lot of mainstream radio. They have massive songs in the alternative world.
And they have a huge, huge fan base. Yes. And they don't care if any of those were right on the radio. But this one, that's how we all kind of heard of you the first time.
Look you in the eye. Yeah. I love this. I would be upset. They started to play it again later a little bit. They don't play it much.
I saw them, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or something. And I think they didn't play it. Like, I don't really remember, but I don't remember hearing this.
I remember being a big news story when they played it again, maybe once, or they like put it in. But
it was that big of a deal.
Oh. Let's do Nirvana. This song was so successful, it went against their counterculture reputation. It was the one that launched them.
Sure.
Which is
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
And so they, for a while, stopped playing it. And they came back around to it. Because I think eventually you go, I don't want people to have to come pay money and then not get what they came for. But, and I remember hearing Kurt Cobain talk about Nevermind after it was made, because the guy who produced Nevermind is one of the ones from Garbage. You may look this up, Mike.
Which Big?
Yeah. Who's in Garbage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he produced their debut album.
But with a, well, not debut, no, because they had Bleach. They had.
Oh, before Nevermind?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They had, but major label probably, okay. Debut album. And I remember Kurt Cobain going, it was just too many instruments. It's too slick.
Oh, wow.
Afterward.
Yeah.
Even after all the success that they had.
Interesting.
Had a nice job with the Butch Vig reference there.
He did some punk rock stuff too.
And thanks for the pre albums. I didn't know Bleach. I thought Bleach came later.
No. You may look that up. I don't want to be wrong about something that I feel like I know a lot about.
You see, Nevermind was 91.
I bet Bleach had to be
89.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, you're a fan. So
that's why I don't want to be wrong about it.
Have the Foo Fighters ever covered this?
I don't know. If never,
I've
for
always
something
wondered,
you could pay and consume, like maybe like on YouTube. I don't know.
No, Mike. Just like at shows, I've always wondered if Foo Fighters cover Nirvana.
You got to think Dave Grohl gets tired of answering Nirvana questions.
Yeah.
Because the Foo Fighters have had so much more sustained success than Nirvana ever did.
Correct.
On a massive level, but Nirvana changed music.
Yes. But we can't help the fact that Nirvana, that Foo Fighters was really a big part of Nirvana, because you have Dave Grohl and then you have Pat Smear.
Right, who was the fourth member of Nirvana.
Yeah, the unknown fourth member of Nirvana, you know? Like, so, and he's part of Foo Fighters. I feel like that's so important for everyone to know that they spawned from the big famous Nirvana.
And they were making, he was making Foo Fighters by himself,
yeah,
doing all the instruments while Nirvana was still happening. He was also maybe the sixth drummer or seventh drummer of Nirvana. It wasn't.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you see a cover of Nevermind from Foo Fighters?
No.
Yeah. I wouldn't think that they would.
I feel like the crowd would lose.
They would. They absolutely would.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would. How about the Beastie Boys? Now, I remember watching this in a documentary. Love the Beastie Boys. They did Fight for Your Right to Party as a way to satirize frat boy, like, jock culture. But people made it a party anthem. Mm-hmm. Like, took it the same way that people took Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA.
Oh, yeah.
They took it and were like, this is a song about America. But Bruce Springsteen wrote it to be like,
it's a protest.
Hey, these are some not good things about being born in the USA.
Yeah.
So the Beastie Boys, they would see all other people, like, celebrating because of the song. And it's like, that's not what we wrote it. We wrote it to kind of make fun of them.
Wow.
One of my friends, whose name is Ben, does the character Wheeler Walker. And I think he'd be okay with me saying this. He started to see people at shows thinking Wheeler was real and correct, and they were there to celebrate him. And he was like, sure. No. We wrote this as a joke.
Sure.
And so we stopped doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, a lot of us consumers, man, we really don't even know the difference. Sometimes we don't even want to know the difference. We do that with actors all the time. George Costanza. You think he gets tired of being George Costanza?
I don't know. We had him on. He's pretty happy. The Foo Fighters. We were talking about him earlier. Big Me. The video was a Mentos commercial parody.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious. I think this is probably their first hit.
Yeah.
Because I remember it, and I was like, oh, look, Dave Grohl had kind of the weird face and long hair, and they were funny. But what happened was at shows, it wasn't they didn't like playing the song. People would throw Mentos at them.
Oh, wow.
They were going to pelt it with Mentos. So they stopped playing the dang song because they didn't want to get hit by stuff.
That's funny.
Stairway to Heaven, which is a Led Zeppelin song, their biggest song, one of the biggest songs in, you know, rock and roll history.
Also a very long song.
Yeah.
Had to do with it.
This and Freebird.
Too long.
But you could also take a break, right? Like Robert Plant could walk down and have a drink, have a smoke.
Sure.
While they just play a guitar part.
Yeah, but then the drummer's like, dude, what the hell? Like, come back, I'm tired.
He was always kind of stubborn about prioritizing his solo material after Led Zeppelin broke up, so he never wanted to play it.
Oh, wow.
As a band, they played it, but he just was not, you know. He started playing it a little bit.
Yeah.
Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You, which is really her only big smash. Yeah,
that's awesome.
She dropped it from her set because she felt she could no longer personally identify with it. So she said if she did perform it, she'd be lying.
That's the artist in her.
Yeah, fun fact. That song was written by and performed by before Sinead O'Connor?
Nothing compares to you. Bowie?
No.
Oh, I feel like you're going to say it and I'm going to be like, exactly.
Yeah, you will. He put it on a record.
Boy George.
Mm-mm. Prince.
Prince! That's stupid.
This is his version.
Since you've been gone, I can do what
I knew it.
And it's great. It's a Prince's version. Yeah. Obviously great. Styx, Mr. Roboto, the song and the album created a huge rift in the band.
Really?
Yeah. It was his concept. The remaining members ditched it. And they fought, and it was basically around this song and this record, huh?
Couple fun stories. I saw the singer of Styx at Home Depot a few years ago.
That's pretty fun.
He totally acted like he didn't want to be there. He was with his wife, I think. And
how did you recognize the singer of Styx, Dennis DeYoung?
I know what he looks like, and I saw him, and I'm like, holy crap, that's him. And then, you know, when you see someone famous, what do? You Google him just to make sure.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, that's him. And then the second fun fact is when I was a kid, I used to turn the fan on, you know, like the little fan that sits on the table, and sing right in front of it and go, arigato, Mr. Robot. All the time.
That's funny. Bobby McFerrin and Don't Worry, Be Happy.
We talk about this one a lot, and I don't get it. Dude, this is your only one.
Ironically, it no longer made him happy.
Oh, yeah, imagine that.
It was a novelty song.
Again, man, not for you. That's for us. It makes us very happy.
Said I got tired of singing it. R.E.M. What do you think their song is?
I would guess...
Because they have a ton of massive hits, right?
I would guess End of the World.
Oh, good song. Not it, though. But good song. That's a good guess, too, because it's kind of kitschy a little bit.
Yes, it's kind
of... Leonard
Bernstein.
Yeah. No.
Losing My Religion.
No.
Which would be terrible if
I went to an R.E.M. show once. They didn't play a single hit. They just played the whole new record. I was
so
pissed.
So all of these, yeah. Then they don't play anymore.
But he said before... Oh, never mind. There it is.
Oh. Wait, that's...
No, this is Losing My Religion.
Losing My Religion.
Yeah, not the right song. Never mind. Mike's just playing this as filler as I talk.
Mm.
I'll tell you this. He said the song had limited appeal. Michael Stipe did. There was a co-singer on it from another famous band.
It's not your favorite song, is it?
No.
Everybody
Hurts?
Everybody Hurts.
Not this one.
This is so good.
There was a girl who was singing with them.
Girl, I don't know. Who is it? What is it?
This song was originally going to be the Friends theme song.
Oh. I can't think of it.
Shiny, happy people.
And who's the girl from B-52s? Mm-hmm.
Nice. I love this song. I love the video. Adele has a song, and I'm not sure I know this song, but Adele has a song called My Same. The song is about one of Adele's friends, but they had a falling out. So she dropped it from the set list. Mm-hmm. But that'd have been one of those songs I'd be like, I want to get a Coke.
We probably wouldn't even notice if it's gone.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I want to get, I don't know this one, so I'm going
to the restroom.
She put it back in after they reconciled. I don't know that. That's the only one of this whole list I didn't know. And then Prince. What song of Prince's do you think he got tired of playing?
Purple Rain.
Nope. Oh, can you imagine what a Prince showing up playing Purple
the
Rain?
Little Red Corvette. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this. At one point, he goes, okay, this song, I can't play it anymore. It's out of date.
Oh, hey, is it Peep Control?
No. He decided, listen to the clue again. He decided it was out of date. That's your clue. It was out of date. He did bring it back for the Super Bowl halftime show in 2007. But what show did Prince say, this is out of date? What song?
I don't know.
Okay, the last day he performed it was New Year's Day 2000.
Is it New Year's Day? What's it?
What song of Prince's would
I
be,
feel like I need a list
would
of
be
Prince
out
songs.
Of date?
Oh my God, is this a trick question? What is it? Is it out of date?
No. What song?
I'm going to feel so dumb
when
again.
When performing it on New Year's Day 2000.
Oh.
Listen, New Year's Day 2000.
Yes. Oh, 1999. Such an idiot.
I was really trying to lay it out
there. That's pretty funny, though. He's just like, sorry, this ship has sailed. No longer singing this one.
Mm-hmm. Matt.
When did he die? What year was that?
I don't know. Time's a blur. I'm going to say 2015, okay. I'm guessing.
2016.
It was a good 16 years of him saying, not doing this.
It's a jam, though.
I miss this phenomenon. I feel like I remember a lot of my babysitters having Prince posters in their wall, but I never got into Prince because it was just a little before me.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it was always Michael Jackson versus Prince by the group slightly older than me, but I was very much a Michael Jackson over Prince guy. Now that you see what Prince has done for other artists.
Oh, absolutely.
Or inspired, or how they just say he was the best. Like people that are really great go, oh, I'm not a guitar player. Prince was. Like he was a guitar.
Yeah.
And so when you see the great saying that about somebody else, you're like, man, I just wasn't educated enough to know.
And I remember I was friends with these guys in Austin called Grupo Fantasma. Do you remember them? Mm-hmm. And I remember Prince was coming to play a show in Austin, and he had reached out. I'm coming by myself. I just need a band, and I like you guys. So you guys step in and be my band for the night. And it was such an honor for these guys. Like, oh my gosh, a local Austin band getting to be the backup band for Prince. But they, after that night, they remained friends, and some of the members would go play other shows with him, and they would be his backup band other places. But just by like that, and a legend like Prince to say that, to give a little band like that a chance, and then say, I like you. Let's keep doing this. Yeah, pretty cool.
Check out Eddie on the Sore Losers podcast. What do you got?
Yeah, Sore Losers podcast. Me, Ray, Lunchbox, and we're talk sports mainly, but I'm not like the smartest in sports, so it's not all sports. Listen, we talk about life.
None of you are.
I think Lunchbox is pretty knowledgeable at sports. The fact is, though, that he lives and breathes sports that so much he thinks he knows everything about it. So my job on the podcast is to just argue everything that he has to say. And I'm willing to say he's probably 80% right. But there is 20% where he's full of crap, and I'll call him out on it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
And then Ray is just Ray.
Check out Sore Losers. That's it. Thank you very much.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.